Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Is it normal to have really vivid dreams?
Is it normal to feel so bone tired all the time?
Is it normal to be dizzy?
Is it normal to be so outrageously farty?
Hello and welcome to Is It Normal, the pregnancy podcast. I'm Jessie Ware and this podcast follows my pregnancy journey and includes some of you and your voice notes and your stories and your symptoms. With the help of some brilliant experts, we are here to reassure and inform you about all aspects of pregnancy and giving birth. We're now at week 35 and I expect many of you are counting down the days until you finally get to go on maternity leave. Maybe you get to go for that swim, maybe you get to go for that pregnancy massage, that foot rub, acupuncture, whatever. It's the final countdown and we're nearly there. This episode will be focusing on pain management during labour. It's a big old topic. There's many different ways to manage the pain in labour. Some people will choose to have all of them, some will choose to have none. And that is absolutely fine. I'll be joined by anaesthetist Dr. Maria Zia to tell us everything we need to know about epidurals in particular. But first, we're going to hear from our resident midwife, Izzy Borton, to talk us through the other pain relief methods we can use during labour. So, Izzy, we're at week 35. I'm feeling all right. I'm sick of my mother telling me, you look enormous, darling. You're never going to make it to 40 weeks. That baby is coming out very soon. I'm like, thank you. I think I look exactly the same. Please keep your opinions to yourself. I've started watching birthing videos with my daughter.
Aww.
Which I don't know whether it's recommended or not, but she's really into them. And I don't think I want her at the birth. I'm planning to have a home birth, but it's been quite fascinating, her thinking that you poo the baby out and then her seeing that it doesn't come out of your bum. So that's been quite funny. But it's been really fascinating. She's so kind of interested in it. She's like, can I see another
Aww.
One? It's quite addictive. But yeah, nothing else to report from me. I am still working quite madly. My hips are hurting in the night, but I just move over from side to side. I've been getting on with my perineal massage. That's always a joy. But yeah, I've got nothing to really report. So maybe we should go to some other pregnant people about how they're feeling. So we have one voice note that actually is quite important for the conversation that we're about to have, which is all about pain management in labour. So let's kick off with this voice note about a TENS machine.
Hi. So I'm seeing a lot of people are using the TENS machine to help with labour pains. I've got one at home. I just have no idea how to use it for labour pains specifically. So if anyone would be willing to share that information, I'd be very grateful.
So with the TENS machine, for anyone that doesn't know, it's a kind of little handheld device that has some wires attached and some sticky pads that go on your back. And it sends out mild electrical impulses, which kind of stimulate the nerves that are going into your back. And the idea is that these almost like very low level electrical shocks, like electrical impulses, are blocking the pain, the kind of pain sensations that you're feeling, and replacing them with these kind of, it's almost like a buzzing. Have you used a TENS, Jessie?
I tried to use one, but I don't know if I just didn't do it right or it just didn't
work for you.
I don't know. Some people have spoken really highly of them. I feel like it didn't touch the sides, but that isn't to scare everyone.
I think it's really personal.
It's just, I don't know.
I think for some people it really works and for others they don't get on with it.
When's the best time to use it?
So I would say start using it from quite early on in your labour. So when you start feeling contractions and, you know, potentially they're still quite spaced apart and irregular. If you kind of start using it from the early stages, in my experience, find that it kind of almost builds with you throughout the labour, because the way that it works is you have this handheld device and you start off at quite a low level when you have this little button that you press when you start to feel the contraction and it starts emitting the impulses, and you can kind of increase the strength of the impulses as your contractions or surges get stronger. And I think for a lot of people, having something that you are kind of in control of, that kind of you can use when the contraction starts, it I don't know how much of it is,
it's like a focus.
Yeah, it's like a kind of physical and psychological element to it, of like having something that you can compress, and then it has this effect of, the idea is you're kind of blocking the pain sensation with this electrical impulse. So hopefully you have the instructions at home in your box with your TENS machine, but generally the sticky pads are going to go kind of in the middle of your back, two of them either side of your spine, and the lower back again, two either side of the spine. But you can, I'm sure you can find an image online of where to stick your sticky pads, and then it's a case of kind of using the handheld device to start the impulses once your contractions are starting.
So this is one option of pain management. This is something that you can do yourself at home, and you can use all the way up to, I guess, the actual giving birth if you choose to. What are some of the other pain management or pain relief methods you could do at the beginning of your labour at home that you would have access to?
Yeah, so the way that I generally look at any kind of pain relief options or tools or whatever you want to call them, because I think for everyone it's a little bit different how they want to frame that. And, you know, some people don't even really want to think about it as being, you know, pain that they're going to be feeling. But other people just want to accept that that is something that's likely to happen and know how to manage it. So there's a whole wealth of things that you can do from your home, from the beginning of labour, that will carry you throughout your labour. And it might be that you know, if you're having home birth or if you're going into hospital, there will be other options that become available once you're in the later stages of labour. But I kind of think of the three main things you can do where you don't need any equipment, you don't need to go out and buy anything for your early labour, are your breathing is the number one. So, you know, you don't have to have done a hypnobirthing course or, you know, really delved into these kind of relaxation techniques. It's really the most simple way that you can kind of manage with your contractions throughout labour is long, slow, deep breaths. And actually practicing that when you're pregnant can really help. And actually, we probably need to talk about what a contraction is and what it's doing. With your uterus that's carrying your baby, it's a big muscular organ, and what's happening throughout the course of labour is those muscles are contracting, and that's why it's called a contraction, because it's literally like any muscle in your body that can contract when it's working. And what those contractions do is they draw up your cervix, which is the opening of your uterus, and they also are pushing your baby down. So it's kind of that combination of opening the entrance of the womb and pushing your baby down and helping your baby to turn and move through your pelvis. And what that can feel like at the beginning of labour is almost like a period type pain, like a cramping. You might feel it in the front, you might feel it more in your lower back or in the tops of your thighs. And as it builds, you'll start to feel more distinctly your whole tummy tightening. and often starting at the top of your tummy, which the top of the uterus is what we call the fundus. And that's the bit that really builds in terms of as your uterus is contracting, the muscle at the top builds throughout labour in order to have this kind of strength to push the baby down. So when you're in the earlier stages of labour, the contractions that you're having are quite short and they are doing lots of work, but they aren't always lasting very long. And as your labour progresses, their contractions become more regular, closer together, and kind of more...
Intense,
yeah. And that's because they're kind of working harder. So actually knowing that generally a contraction or a surge is going to last around 60 seconds by the time you're in active labour, and shorter than that when you're in your earlier stages of labour, it's helpful to know that because what it means is a few long, slow, deep breaths will carry you through that contraction and then it will stop and your tummy will completely relax and you'll have a little break and you'll have a breather. So I think that's a really good one to bear in mind. Also, movement. So keeping upright and mobile in your labour will really help your baby and it will help you to manage the contractions. So trying different positions and props, like Jesse, you've said before, you have a birth ball. That's a really fantastic kind of thing to have at home. You can sit on a birth ball, but you can use it in lots of other ways. You can kind of kneel on the floor and some comfy cushions and lean over your birth ball, so you're in a kind of forward leaning position. I've also seen people actually use them in the shower or put them in your bath and kind of lean over them in the bath with the shower on your back. So they're quite good. And what we know is if you're keeping upright and mobile in your labour, gravity's helping your baby to move down, and it's also relieving any kind of pressure on your back. And with the movement you have, can really help you to kind of move through those contractions. And then one of the other things that I think can really help in the earlier stages of labour is try as much to distract yourself. So almost pretend labour isn't happening until you can no longer fool yourself anymore. So that can be music, putting on your favourite film or TV show. Laughter is so good, you know, like keeping yourself distracted.
But there's something about laughter producing a certain hormone that is really important in labour.
Yeah, we've just talked a lot about contractions and we've not talked about what's making these muscles contract, and it is, as you said, it's oxytocin, which is the kind of love hormone, and it's the hormone that we release when we're in labour, when we're breastfeeding, when we're being intimate with someone, having sex, when we orgasm. So it's a fantastic hormone, and we release it when we feel calm and safe and kind of relaxed, and you know, in our kind of mammal brain where we're cozy and warm and kind of undisturbed. So in the stage of labour where you're at home and you're not needing, you know, you don't have a midwife with you and you're waiting for these surges to kind of build and become more regular, it's trying to create an environment where you feel all of those things safe and kind of supported. And so with the distraction techniques, I sometimes recommend things like walking or distracting yourself with, you know, TV or music, or, you know, even going to the shop. I've had women tell me that they've popped Tesco's in early labour, just trying to ignore what's happening, keeping mobile. And then when the time is telling you that you need to be on your own, then kind of staying in a space where you feel nice and calm. So moving on from that, so at home as well, you know, we come on to talk about pool birth, but at home you hopefully have a bath, or if you don't have a bath, a shower, and that gives you access to that kind of warm water, which is can be really helpful in earlier stages of labour, just keeping you relaxed and calm and in quite a like tranquil environment. And in terms of your kind of, if we're talking about like pharmacological options. You can take paracetamol throughout pregnancy. You can take paracetamol if you want to take it at home in early labour, then you can. Some people, I think it's that thing of, I'm not sure how much paracetamol is really doing as such to really, you know, it's not going to stop you feeling those contractions, but it can sometimes take the edge off a bit. Did you take any paracetamol in your labours, Jess?
I didn't, but I feel like that's kind of like a why not? Mm. It's may as well, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that I got told that it was very much about this distraction thing in the early labour, but sometimes you can't be distracted. And especially if you're on your first birth, you may feel like you are, and there's that annoying kind of milestone, which is the 4 centimetres dilation when they say you're in active labour, but you may have been bloody labouring for a whole 24 hours and they could have been really thick and fast, but your cervix isn't dilating and that's incredibly frustrating. I definitely think I, now that I think about it and you just talking about it, gravity, I stood up a lot of my last labour. It was also second birth, which sometimes, majority of the time, is quicker. But I do wonder whether that did help, just the standing up, even though my legs would feel kind of a bit shaky because you have kind of that adrenaline too, which you don't really want to have, but it's there and it's intense, you know? Now, okay, so we've talked about some of the things that you can do in the comfort of your home. You can even incorporate those in the birthing center, in the labor ward. Let's talk about some other more medical, pharmaceutical pain relief methods. Maybe this is going to be when you're in the hospital, I presume.
Yeah, so I think everything we've covered so far are things you can do at home. And I think you touched on a really important thing there, is that the medical world has divided labor into these stages, and actually they don't really exist in a way. We've kind of applied them to labour, but actually you're absolutely right, Jess, is you're going to feel that you're in labour from when you have that first contraction, and you're probably not going to rest very well from that point onwards. You're not going to get a full night's sleep, so I think it's important to bear that in mind, and also to know that it's normal for labour to last a few days from when you get that first contraction. It is really normal to be having contractions for, you know, up to 24 hours, if not more, especially with your first baby. So what we're kind of referring to with being 4 centimetres dilated is essentially once you're admitted, if you're planning to give birth in hospital, essentially you're admitted when your contractions are really regular. So when you're having 3 to 4 contractions within a 10-minute period is the kind of general guidance. And as you said, these contractions are working to a point that your cervix is dilating. So from that point, once you've been admitted to hospital and you've been told, again, frustratingly, with the word active labour, as if before that it wasn't active, which we all know is not true, you'll have some different options available to you. So I'd say one of the most common options that people try is something called gas and air, which we call Entonox. It's a mixture of oxygen and nitrogen, so it's nitrous oxide. And it's something that you inhale through a mouthpiece. It's a very kind of palatable option because it has very few side effects. So because you inhale it, once you've taken a few deep breaths afterwards, it's kind of out your system within 30 to 60 seconds. So if you try it and you don't like it, you just stop using it and there's no kind of further impact there. And what the gas and air does is it helps to, the way I describe it, is it almost like it distances you from the intensity of the contraction, and it helps to control your breathing and kind of keep, because you're breathing it in and exhaling it whilst you're having the contraction, it that's kind of helping to kind of slow your breathing down. And then with the inhalation of the gas, it's also helping with the pain. So that's quite a common option. Some women find it makes them feel a bit nauseous. It can make your mouth a bit dry. But again, if you're not getting on with it, if you've given it a few goes over a few contractions and you're really not liking it, then you can just stop using it. So that's one option. You also, if you're on a birth centre, I think one of the main kind of draws of the birth centre are the birthing pools. Water immersion in labour is, we have so much kind of evidence that tells us it's really positive experience for birthing people to use water immersion. It's really relaxing, kind of reduces your anxiety, can help reduce your blood pressure. It also gives this weightlessness and buoyancy, which you've not felt for so long when you're pregnant. In the last few weeks, you've been probably feeling really heavy and a bit uncomfortable. So it has that really added side effect. And I think if you're someone that enjoys having baths and, you know, for example, would choose to get in a bath to relax or choose to get in a bath if you had period pain, then it's likely to be an option that is kind of attractive for you. So yeah, the pools are really nice. And I once had someone ask me if they would be the only one in the pool. And the answer to that is yes, you have your own pool in labour and your own room to birth in. So yeah, it's not a kind of shared environment. I think that's the other thing, is it can feel really safe being in the pool because you're almost in this kind of protected space where it's just you, no one's kind of touching you or close to you. You can really get in your zone in labour and feel really kind of safe and protected. It's often quite, you can dim the lights, and lots of pools that are built in have like soft lighting built into them as well.
Regarding the pool, is it true that it can sometimes slow down labour because you get too relaxed, or is that kind of not that usual?
It can do, but in my experience, I find that, I think there's this thing of, oh yeah, the pool can kind of make you too relaxed and things slow down, and oh, you shouldn't get in the pool if you're not a certain number of centimetres dilated and things like that. And I think it's a case by case, you know, person to person. I think you have to look at the whole picture, what's happening at the time. If someone's having really regular contractions and things are really ramping up, then I think the pool is unlikely to put a stop to that. But I would say that when people arrive at the hospital in labour, they're in a new environment. If they've been having regular contractions before arriving, sometimes the process of getting to the hospital, arriving in a strange place that has these bright lights and someone new kind of offering you various, you know, examinations, can be quite disturbing to the process of labour, and it can cause your contractions to kind of die down a little bit. They might space apart, they might feel less intense than they did when you were at home. And it's that frustrating thing of you feeling like, oh, but they were really strong and regular at home, and I've come in and now, you know, whoever's looking after me doesn't believe me. And that's really not the case. We really know that's very common. And the contractions will come back. We just need to help the person in labour to get back into that zone of feeling kind of in a calm, quiet environment, often dimming the lights. And so probably jumping into a pool at that point might not be the best idea, because if you're already not feeling regular contractions. So, but what I would say is, if you get in the pool and the contractions seem to change and slow down or don't seem quite as they were before, then you can just get out and you can mobilize and you can have a bounce on a ball or you can have a walk around the room and see what happens. So I think, yeah, with the pool, you can get in and out. It's not like once you're in, you're stuck in there. You can get out later on in labour.
I also have a tip for anybody who wants to look like a absolute mad woman. You could do what either my wonderful cousin did. She went into the hospital with her sleeping mask on. So she couldn't see the bright lights and big, massive headphones. Or you could do me, where I went in with huge sunglasses and massive headphones and a hood. And I looked absolutely crackers, and I didn't care. You won't care. So bring some sunglasses, bring an eye patch. Who cares? If it keeps you in the zone, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that is, those are some good tips. And I've definitely, yeah, escorted someone into the birthing centre with a fantastically large pair of sunglasses on. So that was the other thing. As we talked about paracetamol, once you're in the hospital, we can give you slightly stronger tablets. So something like dihydrocodeine is sometimes offered in hospital. which is like a slightly stronger oral pain relief option. You can bring your TENS in with you. If you get in the pool, you obviously can't use your TENS because it's a electrical device. Another thing that lots of birth centres offer is aromatherapy. And this is something that, you know, you can buy aromatherapy oils to use at home as well. Some aromatherapy oils actually help to kind of increase contractions, and some are more for like relaxing and having like a more calming effect or an invigorating effect. So definitely inquire about that. It might be that at your local antenatal classes they can share some information with you about the oils that are safe in pregnancy and kind of the availability of those oils at your birth center. And then another option that is usually available in birth centers is an injection of either something called morphine, pethidine, or diamorphine. They're all part of the same kind of group of drugs. The main reason for having one would be pain relief, but they can make you feel quite drowsy, and they can also sometimes make you feel a bit nauseous, so they're often given with like an anti-sickness medication as well.
And are they safe for the baby?
Yeah, so with these, I mean, we wouldn't give them if they kind of weren't safe, but there's a bit of a caveat to that in that they do cross the placenta, and so the same effect that they have on yourself of making you quite drowsy, it can have the same effect on the baby. So with these medications, we tend to not try to, well, it can sometimes be a bit difficult to predict what's going to happen, but we try to not give them too close to the birth of the baby, so that when the baby's born, they haven't still got a lot of the drug in their system, and it kind of doesn't affect their kind of natural kind of instincts to start breathing and kind of establish their own respirations. But we can't always plan labour and birth, so it's something to bear in mind, because we might think you're in the earlier stages of your labour and you might choose to have the injection and then things progress very quickly. So it is still possible, you know, it's likely they'll still be in your baby's system, and then it can affect things like breastfeeding as well. But for some birthing people, they find that the kind of what we class as the earlier stage of labour can be quite lengthy. So if you have had a few days of irregular contractions, or sometimes contractions do start and stop a bit, you have kind of few hours where things completely stop and then start up again, and that obviously really disrupts your sleep. So in my experience, sometimes people choose to have one of those medications if they're experiencing that type of labour and they just need a few hours of sleep, and it kind of allows your body almost to rest and reset, and then you come round, not that you're like completely out, but the medication wears off, and then you find that the labour almost progresses probably because you've actually been able to have some rest.
Thank you, Izzy.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So, we have heard from Izzy on a wide range of pain relief, but the biggie, and the one that there seems to be a lot of stigma about, is the epidural. So I thought it would be useful to speak to an anaesthetist to give us the full lowdown on epidurals, what they're about, what happens, how you feel, all of that. Joining me now is anaesthetist and mum of three, Dr. Maria Zia. Maria, thank you very much for joining us.
Our pleasure is all mine.
So, managing pain in a labour ward, in that situation, what level of managing pain can you deliver? Is it just the epidural, or is it other bits and bobs, or is the epidural the kind of big one?
So as anaesthetists, the main thing that we get involved with are epidurals and spinals. I know you've already chatted to Izzy about some of the other options, but usually those are midwife-led or patient-led until you come to the epidural or the spinal, which is where I get involved as the anaesthetist. And for some cases where epidurals and spinals aren't possible, we can do something called patient-controlled analgesia, which is usually a syringe with a drug like an opioid, something like morphine or something called remifentanil, that the patient controls themselves, and that gives them medication through their vein when they press a button.
Okay. So we know about pethidine and diamorphine. Would that be something you'd be getting involved in, or is that more midwife-led?
So diamorphine is usually given in a spinal or an epidural, but the thing that we can give is something called fentanyl or morphine through a syringe that the patient controls themselves. And that is what I would be involved with setting up and monitoring throughout.
When do you usually get involved with an epidural? Let's talk about the epidural. When is usually the time that you will agree to an epidural? Because is there, I believe there's a kind of window that you're allowed it or not, or is that a myth? I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. There is a perception that there is a window that a woman needs to ask for an epidural in. The traditional thinking is that you can't ask for it too early because it might slow down your labour. Right. There's an element of truth to that. So traditionally, it would be nice for you to wait until you're in what we call established labour, which is your cervix is at least 4 centimetres dilated and you're having regular contractions. So most anaesthetists will be more than happy to do an epidural from 4 centimetres. And usually I get involved when a midwife asks me and says, look, my lady needs an epidural. Now, the other side of the spectrum is that some women unfortunately feel, oh, but I can't leave it too late either. Otherwise, they'll say no, which is, and it should be, a myth.
I will
actually give an epidural to anyone who asks. The only reason I do not give an epidural is when the baby's head is crowning, because then it's too risky to put one in, and a patient would really get no benefit if they're going to push their baby out in the next few goes. So the epidural should be a viable option for anyone who asks for it at any time, really.
And can you explain how you administer the epidural? What's going to be the situation that happens? Is it through your spine? Is that what happens?
Yeah. So usually a midwife will come along and say, hi, I'm looking after so-and-so in room 4. And she's finding that the pethidine hasn't worked. She's not getting along with gas and air. She would really like an epidural now. Her labour has gone on long enough. She feels like she's getting really, really tired. And so I'll pop along, say hello to the lady. I will just take a very brief medical history. And the reason for doing that is to find out if she's got any allergies, whether there's any reason that I shouldn't be citing an epidural. And there are a few which I'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. And then I speak to them about all the risks and the benefits. I find that most patients nowadays, especially, are really well informed about epidurals. So they might just say, look, I know all of that, but what I'm concerned about is X or Y or Z. And so I'm happy to sit and chat to them about that. And then we generally need a lady to have a drip in her hand. Some of them already have a drip for drugs to speed up the labour, or for fluids if they've been sick, or for antibiotics. If that's not in, we need to get one in. And then after that, I clean the back. I do expose the back, give it a thorough clean to make sure it's as clean as possible, with some antiseptic solution. And then we do get them to sit in a very, very weird position. Now, you can either sit on your bum and curl forwards, or sometimes a bit more comfortable for a woman in labour is on her side. and curled up into the fetal position as much as she can, because, you know, there's obviously this massive bump there. And then once I've scrubbed and got all of my equipment ready, it's basically an injection with a needle that goes into the spine. And then we introduce through that needle a very small catheter. Catheter is just medical speak for a thin, fine tube. Mm-hmm. And the tube is attached to a bag of actually local anaesthetic and another drug. And that just goes into that space in the spine, the epidural space. And then the needle is taken out, but that tube remains in. And everything is fixed to the back with miles and miles and miles and miles of adhesive tape. So it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't dislodge. And then a lady is free to move around within the bed, and the drip can be started. So it's like a drip, but it just goes into the back. And it's got a very specific medication in it.
And how quickly can it relieve pain?
So from seeing a woman, putting the actual epidural in, sighting it, can take about 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes. But to expect to see an effect will take a further 15 to 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I do warn patients about this, which is why sometimes we really do have to balance the risk of putting one in versus the benefit. Because if a lady is very, very close to delivering her baby, by the time we've set one up and got it in and got it running and put the drugs in, they might not ever get any benefit from it, and they've already delivered their baby. So I say usually by the time I'm at the door to the patient feeling a bit comfortable, it's usually about 35 minutes.
And I guess the challenges that you can face is that someone may be having very regular contractions or surges, whatever you want to call it. And so you potentially be writhing around, moving around, because it's making them feel a bit better to kind of, you know, loosen up.
Oh, definitely.
So you, I presume, have to keep them very still and kind of do it very quickly in between a surge contraction.
Yeah, this is something that most women are the most anxious about. Oh, but I can't sit still, but my contractions are coming on so fast. But I say, let me take on that stress. Don't worry. I am used to doing this. I am used to doing this on women who are moving, who are in absolute agony. And I'm very, very used to working under these conditions. All anaesthetists are. That is what we are trained to do. And what we do is we work around the contractions. So as long as you've got a very good dialogue with the lady and you say, look, I'm going to start the procedure. At the moment, I'm just feeling the bones in your back. Okay. If you have a contraction, just say contraction and I'll stop what I'm doing. And then we look for that window. There is a part of the procedure that really does require complete stillness. But I do warn the patient and I try and time it so that a contraction finishes. I quickly push in with that needle and find the space that I'm looking for. And then the needle comes out. And then as soon as the lady has another contraction, I say, you know, it's all in. So it's fine. Lift your neck up, breathe, you know, take your time. So it's a very narrow window we have, but we do get there.
And can you walk around if you've had an epidural?
Oh, this is a difficult one. So we've been working on clever people, cleverer than me, have been working for many, many years on what's called a walking epidural. So far, I've not seen it happen with any convincing effect, to be honest. So I would say we have tried as much as we can to give a low dose anaesthetic that covers the pain relief, that gives you adequate pain relief. But there will be a degree of leg weakness along with that, of muscle weakness and leg weakness. So women find that they're usually mobile within their bed. But the idea of walking around, even supported, sometimes isn't encouraged because those legs can be weaker than you think they are.
Are there any other side effects that people should be aware of that is going to happen with an epidural?
Yeah, so there are a few side effects. I would say the common things, I'll talk about the common things first. Some women are very sensitive to some of the medication that goes in through the epidural, and it can cause women to itch or it can give them terrible shakes. And sometimes they're not told about that and they're terrified. Why am I shaking? Why am I all itchy? So that's one of the first things I mentioned. I say, look, this can go in, but it can cause some women to feel itchy, which we can give you some antihistamine for. It can cause you to feel a little bit shaky. Some of the other more common things are the weakness in the legs, the heavy legs. Another side effect is that sometimes the epidural might not work. So it might only numb one side of your body or just a small part of your body instead of numbing you evenly from the waist downwards. And if that happens, it might just need replacing. So that is, a new epidural would be inserted. And then I suppose one of the things that we do worry about. It's occasional, it's not extremely common, but your blood pressure can decrease, okay, with an epidural as soon as it goes in. And as soon as the drugs are given, the midwife is trained to take the blood pressure regularly and really monitor that woman. And again, that's occasional and it can be immediately remedied. As I said, a lot of women will already have a drip with some fluids running and that helps to, you know, keep the blood pressure stable. The other things people worry about are headaches. There is a chance, it's quoted to be a 1 in 100 to 1 in 200 chance of a really bad headache after an epidural. And that usually happens if the epidural needle has progressed just a few millimetres too far and it pierces a membrane of fluid that surrounds the spine. And if your needle pierces that membrane, there can be some leak of that fluid and that's what can give a headache afterwards. So that is one of the other side effects.
So will you need, once you've had the epidural, will you need to have a re-up of the epidural at any point? Can it wear off?
So the epidural can wear off, but actually, in most units nowadays, women are in control of their own epidurals. It's something called patient-controlled epidural analgesia.
Oh, right.
So what happens is the tube, that catheter, is connected to a pump, which is connected to a bag of medicine that goes into the epidural. And they're instructed. They're given a little button, and you hand the little button, and you say, rules are simple. Anytime you feel pain, you press the button once. And the beauty of that is that the medication comes through, the woman controls it, she tells the midwife, I'm feeling pain, press the button. The medication starts and then the machine locks out. So it doesn't allow you to administer too much too quickly. And then the women are told, if you get uncomfortable, just press the button. So most women, you know, control their own amount of pain relief that they feel. And a lot of women actually want it to wear off the closer they get to delivery, because some women actually want to feel more sensation. And so they work with the midwife and, you know, they'll say, maybe I should lay off of any more button presses if I'm 10 centimetres and I'm waiting. And that's a nice part of it, that they're much more in control. They're much more empowered to control their own level of pain relief through it.
And I guess it's all about that communication with the midwife telling them how many centimetres dilated they are, so that if they are considering wanting to feel that sensation of crowning and when the baby, you're giving birth to the baby, they will have that constant communication with the midwife to be able to hopefully enable that. But equally, if they didn't want to feel the baby crowning, they could equally have the epidural still going. Or do you not?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you kind of advise not to do that?
No, there's no advice not to do that. You know, no woman should be subjected to any sensation or pain that she doesn't want to feel. Some do want to feel it. And so, yeah, they communicate with the midwife and they say, look, I'm really comfy now, but I don't want to be this comfortable when I deliver. And that's fine. Then the midwife will decide when to start phasing, slowing the epidural down and not pressing that button so often. But similarly, other women don't want to feel a thing and they will continue to use the epidural right up until they've finished delivering the baby. And that's also acceptable, completely acceptable.
Now, you touched on an epidural being administered, potentially slowing down progression in labour. Is there a certain time when that can, I mean, you know, you're in active labour when you, even if you have been labouring for many hours before, but when you get to that 4 centimetres, that's when you're officially in active labour. Now, let's talk about the slowing down, is that very common to happen? And how, is that dangerous for the baby? Is that dangerous for the mother, the pregnant person?
I mean, I've seen that happen very occasionally, but I cite an epidural and a woman who is contracting once every 3 minutes religiously suddenly has contractions once every 5 minutes and then once every 10 minutes. Now, sometimes, you know, those contractions can start back again. Sometimes you need a medicine to help with those contractions or to speed it up. But it doesn't, I've not seen it slow down the labour so drastically that it becomes dangerous, not at all. Also like to clarify, a lot of people do think if I have an epidural, I'm more likely to end up with a cesarean section. And that's not true. That's another myth. It's a misconception. There have been several studies done now that show no relation to having an epidural in labour to having a cesarean section at the end of it. What an epidural does do is that it can prolong the second stage of labour, so the actual pushing stage once you've fully dilated. And that, I suppose, is because, you know, you have lost your sensation down there, so you might need, you know, help with the actual delivery. So through a ventouse, a suction cup on the baby's head, or forceps. Or it might just take you a little longer to push the baby out yourself.
If you are being induced with a drip, is it quite common, because that can come on quite thick and fast, you know, a drip is encouraging, it's a synthetic, oh, I'm going to say this wrong, but it's encouraging contractions to start potentially before your body was necessarily ready, or your baby was necessarily ready to come out. Do you find that people that are induced are more commonly using epidurals as a pain relief because of that intensity of labour, or is it very different for different horses for courses?
You know, it is different for different women, but definitely inductions and epidurals with the drip almost go hand in hand. And women are explained that, look, your contractions are likely to be far more intense than they would be otherwise. They might be quicker than they would be otherwise. And also that hormone drip can be manipulated. It can be sped up even more, you know, and that can cause even more painful and quicker contractions. So women are usually told beforehand that, look, you can get an epidural in before we start the drip. Some women are keen to see how they go. They say, can I just start the drip and see if I can tolerate it and then ask for an epidural later? And that's also completely acceptable. But yeah, I do find that if women are being induced, they do require epidurals a lot more than women without the hormone drip. That's my personal experience of it.
Yeah. I wanted to know whether you are more likely to tear. Maybe you can't answer this. Are you more likely to get tears vaginally if you have an epidural due to that lack of sensation or not?
Nope. If a midwife is guiding that birth, you are no more likely to tear having an epidural at all. In fact, some might say it's the converse. Because you're so comfortable, you're unlikely to feel that huge urge to push or push too fast and too hard. So actually, you are no more likely to tear with an epidural.
Okay. What are some of the risks that surround having an epidural?
So the common risks are things like having some itching, heavy legs, and needing a urinary catheter to be passed as well, because the epidural kind of numbs the nerves of the bladder and doesn't help you to empty out the bladder that well. So most women do need a urinary catheter as well. But some of the other risks, which are thankfully very uncommon, also do include things like nerve damage. Now, it sounds very, very scary. What we do mean by that is an area of numbness or weakness in the leg that may persist for a few months after the epidural has all been removed and after the birth. In most cases, thankfully, this does tend to, you know, get better on it of its own accord. In very, very, very rare cases, this can be permanent. The only other serious and rare side effects are things like infections. So where anything breaches the skin, no matter how clean and tidy the technique is, no matter how carefully we sterilise the entire area, any needle, anything piercing the skin can introduce a risk of infection. So there is also the largely theoretical risk of a spinal infection or an abscess forming or a blood clot forming in the spine as well, something that in medical speak we call a hematoma. Those things would be very, very serious indeed. They would probably require some form of emergency surgery to sort out. But thankfully, as I said, they are extremely rare to encounter.
Can we go back to diamorphine, or like the morphine option that potentially would happen before you get to epidural stage?
Yeah.
That you may be offered. How would you administer that? Sorry, is it just an injection into the vein and is it a one-time injection?
Yeah, so that would tend to be an injection administered into the muscle, actually. So it would go in, so it would go into your muscle. It's an IM injection. There are some side effects to that. And what people find is that it does dull some of the pain, but rather they stop caring so much about the pain as well. If you see what I mean, it kind of just makes them feel a bit calmer and more accepting, and it takes the edge off, as it were.
I talked about Bake Off when I had a bit of diamorphine on my first birth. I just talked about Bake Off, and I definitely was still aware of stuff happening.
Yeah.
But I talked about Bake Off a lot and kind of chatted to this this lady who was on work experience, I found out later, who I thought was a student midwife. And yeah, just chatted to her about Bake Off, and And it was all quite surreal. But it definitely, I was completely compos mentis by the time I got round to pushing. So that's another one that wears off, right?
That is another one that wears off.
We've touched on this stigma that surrounds epidurals. It's always kind of, you know, I've had loads of friends that have said, I had the epidural, and they kind of sound apologetic, and it seems ridiculous. It helped them manage the pain. But what is it about this stigma that does surround pain relief in birth? And why doesn't it go away?
Yeah, these are really interesting questions, Jessie. And you're right to use the word stigma, because there is a stigma regarding epidurals for childbirth. And it is unique to pain relief in birth, because, you know, nobody would be apologetic for, you know, say, accepting anaesthetic at a dentist before having dental work done on their teeth. So I'm not sure why we feel that we shouldn't be having pain relief for one of the most painful processes in women's lives. And there's no easy answer. You know, in my personal experience, I think there tends to be a societal belief, a sort of deeply ingrained attitude that, you know, childbirth is a natural process. Women have been doing it for centuries, you know, without pain relief. And, you know, maybe there's an expectation that we as women in this day and age should just be able to tolerate it and get on with it. What I also would say is that in my experience, sometimes it's, you know, it's a pressure that women put on themselves. Because, you know, it's quite common for women to share their birth experiences and compare them. And, you know, some feel that, well, my grandma didn't have an epidural. My mum didn't have an epidural. My sister didn't require an epidural to give birth. And my best friend didn't have one either. And so there's an expectation that, well, perhaps maybe I shouldn't be asking for one either. Maybe I should be able to do this without any pain relief. And then the sad thing is that if they do end up requesting one or needing one, because there are certain situations where an epidural might be needed for the labour, these women feel like they've failed somehow, that they've failed in this thing that they were supposed to just tolerate, and they are no longer able to say that I gave birth naturally, which is a real shame, and it's really, really sad. And it's just not an area that women should be made to feel like failures, because, you know, as mothers, we're all heroes, regardless of how we've given birth. You know, a cesarean section is not an easy thing to go through. Natural birth is not easy to go through. Instrumental is not easy to go through. We are all heroes for putting our bodies through what they have been through over 9 months, and then through birthing another human being. And I hope that these attitudes do change and it gets better for women, and there is no pressure or feelings of failure if they have required an epidural to help them through the birth process.
I wanted to ask, does an epidural affect the baby in any way?
Not really, no. That's a fairly clear-cut answer, because we really don't see any side effects or any ill effects on the baby. The beauty of the epidural is the drugs that we give tend to stay within the epidural compartment of the mother. So there's very, very little seepage of that medication into the bloodstream, and negligible amounts of it cross through to the placenta to affect the baby. The only time where we can see a little bit of a negative effect on the baby is if the mother's blood pressure drops, which can happen occasionally once you put the epidural in. So when the mother's blood pressure drops, it just means there's less oxygen circulating to the placenta and hence to the baby. And so their heart rate might dip a little bit, it might slow down. But that's very quickly picked up and it's very easily remedied. Apart from that, the baby is not more likely to be, you know, breathing too slowly. They're not more likely to be drowsy. Epidurals have almost negligible effect on babies.
One thing I wanted to know, just about if you're getting induced and you do get an epidural, are you entitled to the epidural before you get to 4 centimetres dilation? Or is it still that you need to get to 4 centimetres dilation to be an active labour to get the epidural?
I am happy to give an epidural to ladies who have not reached 4 centimetres of dilatation. And that is because those contractions are going to be so painful, so thick and fast. And a lot of women insist on it before the drip has even been set up. And of course, I agree to that as well. So no, you don't have to wait to get to 4 centimetres. You can have the epidural and that drip beforehand.
But it is good to know that in another situation where you maybe aren't getting induced by 4 centimetres, if you were really struggling and you need some pain relief, you can ask for an epidural.
Oh, definitely.
Or some other pain relief apart from gas and air.
Oh, absolutely. What I would say to women is that it's really important that you feel empowered to ask and that you are listened to. So if you've already made your mind up and you know that it's the way that you want to give birth, you don't want to experience any pain and you want an epidural, then there really shouldn't be any obstacles into getting one at any point of the labour. So it's really important to keep talking to your midwife, communicate with her, make your preferences known. And once you've asked for an epidural, it should be given in good time. I mean, there are national standards for this. They say within half an hour of asking for an epidural, a woman should be seen by an anaesthetist, and within 1 hour, she should actually have an epidural.
That's really helpful information. Thank you so much, Maria.
Not at all.
Thank you for joining us on Is It Normal, the pregnancy podcast. I think you will have really helped a lot of pregnant people that are listening to feel like they can make their own decision and be able to understand an epidural really, really well. So thank you so much.
Not at all. My pleasure.
That was Dr. Maria Zia talking about epidurals. She also, when we just finished chatting, she said there's a really brilliant website if you want to learn more about the statistics that surround epidurals, spinal headaches and that kind of thing. You can go to labourpains.com. We'll put it in the show notes. I hope that has helped you feel more informed, whatever you decide to do on the day. And I hope you're feeling okay. You know, we haven't got long to go. I'm definitely feeling like we don't have long to go and I have not got anything sorted yet. But take care and we'll see you for week 36.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.